Welcome to the Friday Night Clive podcast with me, Clive Payne. In this podcast, we look back at the amazing charities, organisations and people we have chatted to over the past few months, all of whom have interesting and important stories to tell. Now, we've heard a great deal about our mental health during the COVID pandemic, but what do young people go through when suffering with mental health problems during their time at school, college and university? Are there policies and sufficient infrastructure in place to help young people who often feel disengaged and drop out of education? If you're a lecturer or a teacher, do you know what to do? Well, to discuss this and tell how her organisation hopes to change things is Hannah Walton from the One Third Project, and she joins me on the line now. Good evening, Hannah.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Not at all. Thank you for your time. For anybody who's not heard of the One Third Project, tell me all about that, first of all.
Yeah, absolutely. So the One Third Project, we're basically a youth-led organisation, and we are supporting students who are aged 16 to 21 who suffered any sort of disadvantage or disruption during their education. And obviously this usually results in a lack of wellbeing, support and disengagement. And our kind of aim is to tackle the way that mental health and wellbeing is being put into education, and specifically the curriculum itself, and then reduce the numbers of students that are dropping out and withdrawing from that. But obviously we're kind of like a stopgap almost between education and whatever the student wants to go on to do in the future.
Why did the One Third Project start in the first place then? What led to that?
It was personal experience, really.
So
I left school at 14, which is obviously very young, especially nowadays. And that was purely down to a couple of different reasons, but mostly mental health. Mm-hmm. I had severe anxiety and I couldn't step foot in a classroom anymore, and I just got so disengaged and withdrew from school completely. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't getting enough support, and obviously I eventually over the years managed to kind of build myself up. I studied online predominantly and independently, and then I got to the point where I'm still struggling. I think it's always going to be a case where your mental health will always fluctuate. But I'm at the point now where I feel like I'm able to kind of tell my version of how I felt things were at the time and how I feel like schools and educational facilities can support students in the future to avoid such a thing happening again to further students.
Do you mind if I ask what your age is, Hannah?
Yeah, I'm 21 now.
So you've gone through sort of senior school, secondary school, you've done A levels, and are you in education presently, or are you doing something else?
So I didn't actually do A levels. I left just before GCSEs, and
right.
I had to do those completely studied by myself. I skipped A levels. I wasn't able to get into a college to do those. And I didn't do an undergraduate degree because, unfortunately, when I entered that, I had to withdraw due to health reasons. Mm-hmm. But I am now able to study again, and I have an offer to study a master's degree in September. So I'm kind of using my experiences to say that even if you don't do certain things, you don't follow the certain standard of how everyone tells you that you must follow the rules and everything, you're still able to get where you want to be, even if it takes you slightly longer or on a different path than everyone else.
I mean, clearly that's a very challenging journey that you've been on. What would you say was the greatest challenge that you experienced from the point when you left, you know, school to where you are now?
I would definitely say it was trying to find support and encouragement, because obviously it's a very different, difficult experience for not just the young person who's going through it, but also the people around them, because not many people know what to do in that sort of situation, which is why I feel like if there was more education within the curriculum based around mental health, or perhaps not just focusing on standard education and looking at alternatives such as blended learning or online learning, as everyone is now familiar with after the pandemic, then we're able to kind of look at the different scenarios. So if something does happen and perhaps someone in your family your cousin or your sister, they're not quite going through a good time in education. Mm-hmm. There are options, and they don't have to sit in silence and struggle. There are opportunities available. So I definitely say it was the hardest thing was trying to find people that kind of understood and knew what to do about everything.
Now, it's interesting you say that, because when I was 16, I was 16 in 1983. So therefore, I went through my secondary school between 1978 and 1983. Now, like, sadly, a lot of children at school, I was bullied, but then, you know, a lot of people were. I'm not condoning that. I'm not diluting it. It happened. But I think that kind of thing had an effect on my mental health. And of course, in the 70s and 80s, we didn't understand about mental health now, then rather, as much as we do now. And, you know, I felt quite isolated and alone. And I'm just thinking, you know, if there'd only been the help and support that was available then, as there is now, then I think things would be very different. But I mean, where does the name One Third come from? Let's start with that one.
Yeah, so when I did apply to university and started in, so it would have been 2019 now, I was only there for a couple of months before I had to withdraw. And I think it was around Christmas time that I withdrew. And I came across this article talking about a study that had been conducted. And they were going through the reasonings why students are withdrawing from university. Mm. And so the one third kind of came from the one third of students that are withdrawing do so for mental health reasons. And obviously that stood out to me, because that was partially the reason I left university as well. And obviously I'd left school previously for those reasons. So it kind of just stood out to me. And then when I during the pandemic, I kind of thought, oh, I actually really want to create something that's actually going to be a beneficial change and kind of support young people in a stopgap situation, because that's all I can do. I can only just do what I can in the sure. in the kind of gap that there is. And I thought, well, what a good name, because it's telling people what they need to know, but also it's not enough that you immediately know what it is. You have to kind of delve in deeper and look further, which prompts a lot of questions, which I think is really important, rather than just kind of being very self-explanatory, because we do get a lot of interest in the name, and that's obviously people then learn about it, and it's brilliant. So yeah, that's where the name comes from.
If I was there for a child or young person in education at the moment, and I was experiencing mental health issues and felt very much in the way that you've just described a few moments ago, what can the One Third Project do for me?
So currently we offer opportunities for young people to get involved in projects and upcoming events. We always have projects ongoing, and we advertise most of them on social media. So that's the best way to kind of, if you're a young person, that is the best way to get in touch and find out what's going on. We do also have a website for that as well. And we're currently in the process of setting up a sort of community online space that is going to be inclusive and safe for young people, students, to go on to and access opportunities in the local area, particularly around the West Midlands and Worcestershire. Mm-hmm. And we'll also have projects and events that they can get involved with, as well as lots of resources to signpost them to professional support if they do need that as well. And in the future, we're looking for one-to-one mentoring once our volunteers have been trained up, and also we're looking to go into like schools and colleges and universities to present and kind of delve in a bit deeper to put mental health in the kind of forefront of what the students are studying at that present time.
Now, all of this must come at a cost. How are you funded?
Currently we aren't having any funding. We are looking for funding actively, but we're keeping the running cost down to an absolute minimum. So all we pay for is the website costs, and that's it. Everything else is completely voluntary and free, because this is all just, we're not doing this for any type of money situation.
No.
It is literally, we just want to make sure as many people can get support as possible. But obviously funding will definitely help us in the future, so we are looking for it.
Without giving away any confidences for obvious reasons, can you give me any examples of where you've helped young people so far to date, and what their reaction has been?
Yeah, so we've had quite a few people say that they've been involved in some of our projects, and we've obviously signposted them and done some research for them if they're looking to get into a particular area. We did have someone who was a young person who just got into university last year, and they were interested in publishing and wanted some experience in that, but they'd struggled quite a bit at school and weren't entirely sure how university was going to go for them as well. And I think they were looking for reassurance and also some obviously resources to help them get into their like selected field as well. So we did some research for them. We gave them access to all our projects so they can get involved as much as they can. We did a slight little project with them where they wrote a blog post for them. It hasn't been released yet, but we're helping them by doing that to give them some experience and something to show that they are looking to get into that area. From that, they've managed to get an internship next year, which is brilliant. So it's always good to hear that you are actually helping people.
what strikes me is that schools seem to have quite robust. I don't want to pick on schools, but we'll say schools and colleges, that they have, you know, a fairly robust anti-bullying policy. But do you think enough is done within educational establishments to support young people who may have mental health issues? Bearing in mind, though, a lot of mental health issues are hidden, so it's difficult for staff to identify that. But do you think there are enough sort of checks and balances in place in your experience?
Yeah, it's a really difficult question to answer. As a young person who had mental health at from about 11 years old up until around now, I know like there were definitely points at times where I was really struggling, but I hid it from teachers. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard as an educational professional to know whether your student or a particular student is struggling, because a lot of people will hide it because they don't want people to know that they're going through anything, especially if it's related to something that's more personal. So it is really difficult to answer. But it's mostly how educational individuals come together to support and engage with students who are at risk. That's where the support comes from. It's a lot of individuals around that person. It's very individualized. However, I do think there is overall more support that needs to be done from a curriculum change, mm-hmm. to more funding in certain areas as well. But obviously, individuals can't do that. All they can do is just keep an eye out, making sure that their students, if a student is disengaging somewhat, just keep an eye on them and check on them. That's all we can do, unfortunately.
Yes.
Until it gets to a certain situation, and then obviously more professional support needs to come in.
Now, you say you hid things. Why did you do that? What were you fearful of something?
I think it's a very obviously when you're a young person or a child, you think that there isn't much of a world beyond what you're currently thinking, and that's not a bad thing at all, because that's exactly how I felt at the time, especially when you're going through anxiety or depression, which is altering how you're thinking anyway. Mm-hmm. And I was definitely thinking, oh no, what if my friends find out, or what if a particular person who is in a perhaps a more popular group finds out, what will people think of me? And I think that's what I was thinking. It wasn't trying to hide to not get any support. It was just, oh no, what are people going to think about me if I say this, or someone finds out about this? And I think if we encourage the conversation a bit earlier within education, and we then kind of create a community in the future where it's okay to talk about things like that, and therefore we should hopefully be able to access how students are feeling sooner, and then get them the help they need a lot quicker than what we currently are.
I mean, we hear a much maligned phrase, it's okay not to be okay. And that is perfectly true. And just because, you know, somebody has mental health issues, that's not a weakness. You know, that's a statement of fact. That is fact. But it's up to that person to, you know, to make that first step
or, as you say, in a school or college or wherever, where teachers and lecturers can keep an, you know, more of an open eye and identify anybody that's struggling.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you were involved with some activities during Mental Health Week, weren't you? Tell me about those.
Yeah, so during Mental Health Week this year, we obviously the theme was nature this year, which was brilliant. And so we started a hashtag on Twitter for the Nurturing My Mind project. And we were able to get quite a few people involved. We got some community groups, some local organizations involved, and it kind of just reminded people that there are lots of different ways to support your mental health, and obviously we're focusing quite a bit on nature and how exercising works, but then we also didn't want to take it away from the fact that young people are still like a part of this week as well, and even though the theme is nature, we wanted to encourage young voices as well. So we did have some takeover days by some amazing young people who were just describing how their days were going and just kind of bringing it down to more of a human level, and kind of making sure that people understood that it's not just this week, it's beyond that as well.
Now, I know you're going to be naturally coy and shy about this, but you've been nominated for a couple of awards, haven't you?
Yes, we have.
Tell me about those.
So it was a bit of a shock, because we've been running for 6 months next month. So we're very, very new still.
Wow, that's really good.
Yes. To be nominated for any type of award, I wouldn't even think that would be possible, let alone this quick. It's been very quick and the support has been completely overwhelming. But the One Fair project has been up for, I think it's Project of the Year and Community Organisation of the Year at two different awards. Mm. And I've been nominated as well for a couple of awards, which is still crazy to me. But I think it just, being nominated, I think it shows that there is an outcry of this type of organisation in the community, and people clearly need something like this to have a stopgap and support their young people in between certain services.
And that your work is being recognised and valued.
Absolutely, yes, definitely.
Now, you mentioned volunteers earlier on. You tell me about some of the roles that your volunteers have.
So we have a small group of volunteers. They are predominantly graduates or are in their last year or so at university. We try to tailor their roles towards what they're looking to do in their future. So we might make sure that, because they're obviously young people as well, and we want to make sure we give them the best opportunities. So if they're particularly looking at marketing in the future, we'll put towards the more marketing side of the organisation. If they want to go into education or around young people, we'll put them towards more the project side of things, so they can get involved with young people and support them in any way they need to, as well as creating opportunities for them in the future. So we do really tailor it to people so they can get the best experience for everyone. But yeah, they are an amazing bunch of people. I'm very lucky. When we first set up in January, I opened up the volunteer applications, and I think within the first 2 weeks we got about 70 applications, and obviously no one knew who we were then. And we're still very new, so yes, it's been brilliant. Very vital.
Are you looking to grow your volunteers at the moment, your volunteer numbers?
Yeah, I think we will be in the future. We are starting to pick up a bit more now. We've had a couple of interviews on podcasts and people are starting to recognise who we are. So I think we will become a lot more busy around the summertime, where we may need some more volunteers to support us.
How can we find out more then, Hannah, about the One Third project?
We obviously have social media. So we're on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook. And we also have a YouTube channel, where we post a lot of our projects, such as the mental health organisation one. And we also have a website, which is www.onethirdproject.co.uk. And if you want to email us directly, we are at hello@onethirdproject.co.uk.
Hannah Walton from the One Third Project, thank you very much for talking to Friday Night Clive.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Hannah. Bye-bye.
That is your lot for this episode. You can catch the programme live every Friday night on Black Country Radio from 8 p.m. If you like our podcast, please subscribe by heading to blackcountryradio.co.uk/podcast or wherever you get your podcasts from. See you very soon. This is a Black Country Radio podcast presented by Clive Payne and produced by Andy Caddick.